Radhe Maharaj. At the time of Diksha, if in case of Guru is initiating loving disciples,
surrendered
devotees.
What may not be there?
Yeah.
These sins are
vanquished or destroyed. In that article you have given us, that person was asking regarding the those sins getting transferred to the Guru. Is that right conception that Guru gets affected by the sins of that disciple? Because on the initiation time, the Guru is as good as Supreme Personality of Godhead. These sins will affect the Guru? This is my question.
The devotee is asking a question that when it's told in Shastras that when conditioned soul surrenders to Guru and takes Diksha, then his sins are taken by the Guru, destroyed by the Guru, eliminated. So first of all, sins means the actions. There's papa karma. There's two types of karma. There's good karma and bad karma, punya and pap. So from our last life's good activities, we've done good karma, then we'll get good reactions, and they'll come to us in this life. And from our bad actions, we get seeds for doing. In our last life, we do sins, then this life, we'll have to suffer the reactions for those sins. So the time of Diksha, the Guru takes Prarabdha, because our karma, which gives us good results or bad results, our karma, as they say in India, karma, our karma that gives us happiness or our karma that gives us suffering, is in four different stages of manifestation and four different stages of direct experience by the conditioned soul. So one of them is called prarabdha, and one is called aprarabdha, and one is called kutam and bijam. These are explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the beginning, and also in Madhurya Kanamani. You can see the kleshagni. When it's describing kleshagni, there's two characteristics. There are six characteristics of bhakti, two characteristics in sadhana bhakti, and two characteristics added more in bhava bhakti, and two more additional characteristics manifest at the stage of prema bhakti. So for the sadhana bhakta, that means the bhakta practicing sadhana from anartha nivritti to asakti, he will pass through and experience two things: Shubhada and Kleshagni. So Kleshagni, Klesh means the miseries, the sufferings, the difficulties. And that's the bad karma. That's the papa karma, papa fall. That's a Kleshagni that becomes destroyed by bhakti, bhajan. And the other one is Shubhada. Shubhada, bhakti, performance of bhakti, gives auspiciousness, but it also preserves the Shubha karma that we have, or the punya karma that we have, which will give us happiness and good results. So when it says at the time of Diksha that the Guru takes the karma, he takes one level of the karma called prarabdha, which is, prarabdha karma means the good deeds or bad deeds which are fructifying in this life and which give us good happiness or distress or misery. So papa karma gives. So this all goes to the Guru. So in Shastras, it does explain in Puranas that any leader, anyone who has taken a position of responsibility, then he is responsible for the people that he's leading. And the percentage of responsibility depends on the position of leadership. It's told that the king is responsible, a certain percentage, the king is responsible for one-third or one-fifth of the sins of his praja. So the king has a bunch of gundas and sinful people in his kingdom, something like one-sixth, I think it's one-sixth of this, all their, of the sinful reactions that they're accumulating by their sin and dakwitri and gundism. That stays with the gunda, he gets it, but one-sixth of that, like you have $10 and I get one-sixth, you still have $10, you don't lose, but I get one-sixth of your money also, it comes to me like a bonus. So they get the sin for all the reactions that that dacoit has to suffer from, the king will have to suffer from. So it applies to the king, applies to the teacher, school teacher, or let's say Brahman, or the guru, and the father, like this, and the king or the prime minister, whatever. And also, conversely, that all any good things or pious activities that they engage in, there's a certain percentage goes to the guru. So that's why the Shastras say that the guru should be very selective. Wait a minimum of 4 years, or minimum of 1 year, if the candidates are Brahmins. If they're not Brahmins, then 2 years for the Kshatriya Thakur. And if their candidates are in the Gotra of Vaishyas, they should wait 3 years. And if they're Shudras or less, 4 years or forever, or whatever. So this is the Shastric standard. Why? Because if the guru initiates prematurely, then he collects a lot of sinful, you know, let's say, quote-unquote, bad disciples, because he didn't examine their characteristics and qualities. So then they go out and engage in so many things, and then he'll get some reaction. Because if he sees that they have the sinful tendency, but then he initiates them. So now he takes the prarabdha. But because, and now they don't have any more prarabdha, but because they have such a sinful nature, such a degraded nature, even after taking diksha, they will veer from the path of bhakti and engage in sometimes many amazingly terrible and gross sinful activities. You know, whatever they may be, murder, rape, robbery, drug, this, that, drug selling, so many things, adultery. So now when the disciple is taking diksha, and he veers from the path and he disregards the orders and disrespects the guru, that's guru avagya, and doesn't follow his teachings or follow the principles, that responsibility and reaction is on him, on the disciple, no more with the guru. So whatever, like you bring some baggage, like you bring 10 kilos of baggage, it's an analogy, 10 kilos of karmic baggage, prarabdha karma, and you meet the guru, he says, okay, give it to me. So, oh, wow. I can really walk now, you know. You took this 10, or let's say 20 kilo rucksack, backpack, you took off my back by accepting me for a disciple, gave me diksha mantras, and so now I'm feeling light, and I'm going nice. So if you stay a true sadshishya, and truly following the guru with sincerity and dedication, determination, patience, and loving mood, then one by one, you go forward in bhakti. So through anartha nivritti, then nishtha, like this. So the fact, your question is, does the guru have to suffer from the sins that he takes from the disciple at the time of initiation? This question is asked repeatedly by many, many gurus, and it was asked also by Prabhupada. You can find it in many places in his lectures and maybe letters also. I don't know about his purports, I can't remember such. But the basic point is that the guru takes all the prarabdha karma at the time of diksha. Now, does he suffer? What's the question? Yes, he may suffer, or no, he may not suffer. It depends on, like a big fire, if there's a big fire, someone has a very big fire burning, you can throw so much trash in there. Big, big fire. But if you have a small fire and you put lots of things in it, then it gets smothered. There's no air for the fire to drink or breathe. And it needs air. It needs a certain balance. So that's why it's told that one should, when he takes initiation, if he takes from a kanishta, like we know, he just told you this article, he takes from a kanishta adhikari, his fire is very small. What is a fire? It's a fire of transcendental wisdom. The main thing is a fire of transcendental wisdom. You can see throughout the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning it says, chapter 4 and 5, like this, the fire of transcendental wisdom burns up the seeds of material desire. You're hearing? A transcendental wisdom is on now. Transcendental wisdom is very important. It's not, you know, the guru has to be so charismatic or the gurus in Bob are praying when he's rolling on the floor. We don't know anything about that. Who knows what that is? Is it a show? Is it real? Is it true? But and how is it going to help me anyway? Is the gurus in Bob just rolling around the floor all the time saying, Radhe, Radhe? That's very nice. But it makes me a very strong bhakti sanskara in my heart and mind. But how does it help me? How does it dissolve my sins? We don't see anywhere that you know someone in Bob will elevate someone. It's the knowledge, it's the wisdom which purifies. You know, so there's a whole line of self-realization called Gyan Marg. So we also have Gyan, bhakti Gyan. So the guru has a small fire of knowledge and content of knowledge, then he may have some suffering if he takes too many disciples. So Rupa Goswami, in one place, I think it's in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he said a disciple should be careful that he takes initiation from a Madhyama Adhikari. Because now this is the kind of catch-22, because, well, there's what the confusion, which I didn't feel like this developing in that article becomes too long. But there's something, you know, there's a transition point. Because there's Uttam Adhikari. In other words, when we're talking about Adhikara, Adhikara means a measurement of one's faith. You know, it's all told there in that article. Faith and knowledge. So at least one should take from a Madhyam Adhikara guru. Madhyam Adhikara guru preaches. Kanishtha should not preach and make disciples. He should just do bhajan. And then the Uttam Adhikara, he preaches, makes disciples. Uttam Adhikara doesn't mean that he's an Uttam Adhikari. The Uttam Adhikara devotee, he preaches. But when you're preaching, then you have these four points. You preach to the innocent, and you avoid the atheist, and you befriend the devotees, and you try to lovingly serve the Lord. That's the Uttam Bhakta. So 99.99%, I mean, if I can say that, I really can't say that. How can I judge? But we can assume, and it's probably, I would say, observable also, that most all the gurus, you know, whether no matter they're in traditional lines or neo-Gaudiya lines, let's say, neo-Gaudiya lines or traditional lines of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they're Madhyam Adhikara by qualification of faith and knowledge, or Uttam. And as far as bhaktas, they should be a Madhyam Bhakta. So when they're talking about you should take initiation, at least from a Madhyam, it's not a Madhyam Adhikari. You should say it means a Madhyam Bhakta, because how will you know whether the guru is Uttam Bhagavat? Because we have the Prakrita Bhakta, then we have the Madhyam Bhakta and the Uttam Bhakta. Not Uttam Adhikari. So they don't. Uttam Adhikari doesn't mean Uttam Bhakta. You follow? Because he may be Uttam Bhakta, a Mahabhagavat, but he doesn't preach. He's just in ecstasy. Harade, harade, harade. And you say, oh, he's a fool. He doesn't know anything. He has no knowledge. You know, because his Adhikari is a measurement of knowledge. Knowledge of Krishna and faith. Is he a solid devotee? Is he going anywhere? Is he gonna bloop? So you know, time tells everything, and so and the heart, the meter of the heart also, the heart meter of the aspiring shishya, he measures bhakti, and the mind intellect meter measures wisdom. There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is just blah 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 blah. Read this and read that and cut, copy and paste. But wisdom is knowledge that the speaker and writer has realized. He's experienced and he's realized it. This is wisdom. Tattva darshan. Tadvini pranipatena pariprashnena sevya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanam. He's seen the truth. Seen the truth means he's writing with his realizations, he's writing with his experiences, he's writing from his devotional taste, and he's writing from the... He's writing or speaking by the inspiration of Paramatma and Krishna in the heart and Guru in the heart. So that has value. That's why we generally say, who's writing this book? Or who's... We're not so much interested in the subject of the book, spiritual books, but who's the author? Is he reputable? Is he upstanding? Is he very nicely situated? Then we can have more respect and more appreciation for those teachings. Krishna, the guru, is the ambassador to the Lord. He's carrying the mercy of the Lord, Kripa Shakti Murti. He gives the bhakti, he gives the siddhadeya, he gives everything on behalf of Krishna. So Krishna has him out there, has the guru out there, acting as his representative or ambassador of bhakti. So naturally, he will support him. So if someone, the ambassador of India, he's in New York, and somehow he's highly insulted or something happens, then the whole country of India will be behind him because he's representing that. So many gurus, they have thousands and thousands of disciples. And we don't see anything happening to them. That's why I said they may suffer, they may not. Krishna Prabhupada answered this question the same way. He said, a similar way. He said, yes, the guru takes the reactions of the disciple at the time of initiation. So therefore, sometimes, you can see in Prabhupada's books or folio, sometimes the guru will suffer. He'll get sick, or he may get some headaches or have some... He'll experience some suffering, apparent, at least apparent to everyone else. Everyone else will experience that it appears that the guru is suffering now after this initiation. And you often read, when you read the diaries and biographies and journals of different gurus that share their experiences with the world or with disciples, they say, oh, every time after I give initiation, I get sick for 3 days. They say that. So the answer is yes, in many cases there is some reaction. But in most cases, there's not any reaction. Because for one, Krishna's dissolving all the sins. Krishna's dissolving all... Because the guru is like the yagyashala, right? Like those little portable yagya, what they call it, portable yagyashala, like little copper ones on little feet. The guru is like the yagyashala, and the fire inside is Krishna. So it's Yajnavai Vishnu. So the guru, you get initiated, then you fill up the guru with all your prabdha. So he's holding in that yajnashala, the guru's life or mind, that portable yajnashala, you fill up all your prabdha, but then Krishna burns it. So Krishna's the fire of Krishna in the heart of the guru, and the fire of Krishna wisdom in the guru. The wisdom of Krishna, transcendental wisdom of Krishna, and the presence of Guru, the presence of Krishna or the power of Krishna are the same. There's no difference between Krishna's tattva, knowledge, and his dham. So the guru, so the greater the knowledge and the greater the realization, then the guru can, Krishna, on behalf of the guru, he burns everything up so the guru doesn't feel anything. And sometimes he may be a very learned guru, very extremely advanced in Uttamadikar Madhyam Bhakta, or Uttam Bhakta. But he still suffers. So any suffering for the devotees is arranged by Krishna. As to the cause, we often say out of our own humility, oh, Prabhupada is suffering because of our sins. So the disciples, even if the disciples are sinless, of course it's not true, but if every disciple was sinless, still they would feel, oh, my guru is old now. He's suffering. And because the fact is that whatever happens to a devotee is arranged by Krishna once you've taken diksha. So Krishna is giving suffering to the devotee, to the guru. So is it Krishna giving suffering, or is it the reactions of the disciples that he initiated? Is it the reaction of the prabdha karma that he accepted at diksha from the disciples? Or is it Krishna just independently causing that? Krishna has dissolved all the prabdha, and still the guru suffers. So it's a little tricky to answer this question. That's why I initially said the guru may suffer or may not. So the devotee, that's why when Prabhupada was suffering different times in his experience and his mission, then devotees were saying, oh, Prabhupada's sick, everyone stop misbehaving, everyone behave yourselves. It's our sins which are causing Prabhupada. That was the feeling, you know, the feeling of gratitude or shamefulness. Oh, it's our fault. You know, you're good, but we're nonsense disciples, so we're causing your suffering. So they felt sorry, you could say, repentant and sorry for that. So how or why the advanced devotees get sick or ill or seem to suffer and get disease and all the things like regular karmis? For the karmi, it's just their prabdha, their karma. But for the devotee, this is told everywhere in Shastra and by all our acharyas, it's a special mercy of the Lord. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his Tika, 10th canto, chapter 88, verse 8, he explains about this. And he said the suffering of the devotee in the hands of Krishna is like the pain that a son feels when his mother slaps him. The suffering that a devotee, guru or disciple may experience, the setbacks and negativity, the disease, the accidents, whatever they suffer, it's compared to the slaps that a mother might slap her child. And that's on one side. And the other side is that's compared with getting beat up by a gunda. So if a gunda or a dacoit or a thief attacks you, he may kill you. So that thief and gunda who's beating one up is the karmis. So the karmis may suffer, but their suffering is like getting beaten by a dacoit, whereas the suffering of devotees is like getting slapped by your mother. Hey, don't do that. She just goes like this, you know. Oh, I'm sorry. Even to cry. She used to smell like that, you cry. But when somebody break your nose and break your head and twist off your ear and break your arm, that's a heavy beating. So this is an analogy he uses. I like it. It's very nice. So best that we always, the disciple will feel immediate, he should, generally does, he feels as if after taking diksha, he feels as if a weight has been lifted off his shoulders, his head, and that's the weight of the subtle weight of his negative karmas, and what we call prabdha karmas, the negative bad things, the sinful things. Good thing, just not that when you get initiated, the guru takes all your good karma and all your bad karma. Your good karma, you're supposed to inherit so much money in 5 years. So in 5 years, the guru inherits all your money. Your uncle changed his mind and said, oh, you know, I was going to give it to Gaurav, but I think I'll give it to his guru. He's a nice guy. No, it's not like that. The Shubhada is preserved. Krishna says that in Gita. Ananyas chintiyantumam ye jana pariyapashate te shanityabhiyuktanam yogakshemamahamyam. I preserve what you have. I keep what you have as good. What you have is good, I let you keep it and I make it better. And what you have is bad, I take away. I carry what you need, I preserve what you have, and I keep away what you don't need. So that's all implied in the phrase yogakshemamahamyam. Waham means I carry. Waham. I carry the good things to you and give them to you. And I take away the bad things. And any other good things you have, I increase their quality and I increase their amount to the good things you have. You have some humility, you have some patience, you have some mercy and compassion, then that's nice, you have these things. Now you surrender to me, I'll keep those, I'll preserve those, and I'll increase it more and more. You'll become more merciful and more patient and more tolerant by the mercy of Krishna. Kapila Muni explains that when he's asked to define his mother, Devahuti said, what is a devotee? And then he said, Tatikshra Kurinika Srida Sarvadehana. Third canto of Bhagavatam, Kapila Muni is instructing Devahuti. In a famous verse, which is often quoted, to define the characteristics of the sadhu. Third canto, chapter 25, verse 21. Tatikshava karunika surida sarvadehanam ajata shatrava shanta sarva sarubhushana. You might recognize this phrase, ajata shatru. Shatru means enemy, and jana means born. Ajanam or ajat means not born. So this is in this term, this phrase, this is philosophy. It's philosophy and definition of what is a sadhu, what is a saintly person, what are the qualities of a devotee. This is from the idea, which is correct, of Kapila Muni. But this phrase, Ajata Kshatriya, you may recognize from Mahabharata when they're describing Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira Maharaj is described as Ajata Kshatriya. No enemy was ever born. Certainly he's a very lucky person. I would love to have that quality. So, those are very lucky sadhus. In Kali Yuga, I don't think any sadhu is free from having enemies. It's the age is like that. Friends and enemies. You heard this term, friends and enemies. Tatikshava kranika sarida sarvadeharam ajata shatrava shanta sarva sarabhushanam. Tatikshava, tolerant, karunika, merciful, compassionate, surida, very friendly, kind, helpful, sarvadehinam, karunika, surida, sarvadehinam. He's friendly to all. Our Srila Prabhupada, a friend to all. There's a book like that. So this is because he's a great sadhu, he's a Siddha Purush, a great saint. So we describe the saint as like this. Karunika, excuse me, Surida Sarvadehinam. Sarvadehi doesn't say Sarvamanush. Doesn't say Sarvapurush, Sarvamanush. Doesn't say all, he doesn't say friendly to all men. Not, it says all Dehi. Dehi means all embodied beings. All embodied beings. Every jiva has some type of body. So the true sadhu, he's very friendly, that's what he says. He's very merciful and friendly to all living entities. To the dog, to the cat, to the bird, to the pig, to the monkey, to the flea, to the ant. As I mentioned before, several times when I used to do parikrama, I've never seen it out here, but I saw it in Vrindavan years ago. There was one sadhu, I was on Vrindavan parikrama. Sadhu was walking around with a jolly. And inside the jolly, he had about 3 kilo of sugar. And he was in front of me, a few hundred meters in front of me on the Prickamore. And I saw he would walk, and then he would stop, and he would bend down to the ground, kneel down, and then do something, put his hand in his bag, and then stand up and walk. So I'm watching all this from behind. He walks 10 feet, then he stops. He walks 50 feet. And because he was stopping so much, soon I caught up to him because he was about 400 meters ahead, and then I was thinking, what is he doing? There was so much curiosity, what is he doing? So I went and I inspected with my eyes, which is not a very good source of collecting knowledge. Seeing is not believing. Hearing is much better. So I looked and I said, oh, he's bending down and he's dropping some white powder on the ground. I saw from 5-6 feet. Then I went closer. And I still saw he's dropping sugars. And I bent down. And said, "What are you doing? Kyakuri." And he said, "See, this is under this tree. These are holes. These are where ants live. These are ant chantigar, a house of the ants. Little holes in the earth at the base of the tree. And I'm sprinkling this here." Because it's early now, it's a little cold, it's 6 o'clock in the morning where you and I are in the sprinkling. But when the ants wake up, they'll come out of their house and say, oh, what fun, you know. We didn't have to go anywhere, we didn't have to go to work and bring home, sugar for our babies, and we just have it right here at our doorstep. So they thought it was a big chuti, a chanti chuti, chinti chuti. Thought it was a holiday for the ants, chinti chuti. So they say, oh, we don't have to commute to work. We don't have to run so far on our little legs and try to collect a couple grains of sugar to take back to our house to feed our wife and kids. And that's what anybody does anyway. They run very far away, collect some sugar, bring it back, and give it to their sugar. Sugar is a name that they use in America sometimes. A guy will call his girlfriend Sugar. That was a few generations ago, actually. Like honey pie. Honey pie, sugar. Maybe that's in the beginning of marriage. I don't think later on. I don't think later on all these terms are there. You might say, "Oh, hey, Corella," you know. You won't call your wife honey pie or hey sugar, what's for dinner? You say, "Hey, Corella, hey calm egg, you know calm egg? It's like a very bitter medicine. Hey, golden seal, hey, you know, hey lemon." Things can get a little sour after some time. What's sweet becomes sour. So we can say, "Oh, honey pie, you know, honey pie, how are you? This, that, I bought some flowers for you. Oh, that's nice." After a few years of marriage, then you say, "Oh, lemon," oh, lemony, or whatever you call it. Females, lemony. Males, lemon. Males, lemon, and females, lemony. Oh, lemony, like Melanie, Madhavi, Melanie, different names. Oh, lemony. Yeah, what do you want? Are you cooking anything tonight for dinner? No, not tonight. Okay, I guess I'll go out. Okay, you can do whatever you want, you know. I'm not cooking anything. Why? I already ate dinner myself. I ate on the way home from work. I ate, and that's that. Acha. So you're not cooking? No. Okay, lemony. Then he goes out down to Govinda's restaurant and gets some Mahaprasad. A happy ending. So this is the point about the guru accepting the karma. So this is nice qualities. The devotee has all these qualities, tolerance and compassion, friendly to all. So that's fact. Guru can accept reactions and he does accept all reactions, whether he suffers or not. Let's put it this way. Does the guru accept the karma of the disciple at the time of initiation? Yes. The Shastras say the guru accepts the Prabhupada karma because that's what's fructifying in this life. Prabhupada may fructify next life. And Bijamakutam in future lives. Guru accepts the Prabhupada karma, which means the mental and all the kleshas, you know, Adiatmika klesha, Adibodhika klesha, Adidavika klesha. So many of those things become adjusted and purified and elevated and improved by taking diksha. Your physical self, your emotional self, your mental self all becomes balanced and becomes more healthy. So because klesha means adibhautika suffering caused by my papa karma, adidaivika suffering caused by just being in this world. Everyone has the same karma, we're in this world. And too hot, too cold, and this and that, adidaivika. And adiatmika, my own body, my own suffering. So when one takes diksha, that parabdha, that klesha, is kleshagni. Because Guru, surrendering to Guru and taking diksha mantras and serving Guru, this is part of bhakti. Right? Guru Padashraya. The first three limbs are all about Guru Shishya. Bhakti means the practice of devotion under the guidance of Guru to attain Bhagavan, Krishna. So the first one is Ado Guru Padashraya. Diksha Adi Shikshanam. Take diksha from Guru, then receive shiksha. Then third, Vishram Bena Guru Seva. Then fourth, Sadhu Vartana Vartade. So in this way, because the first three limbs of Bhakti Bhajan are all about the disciples surrendering to the Diksha Guru and serving and cementing a personal relationship with the Guru. Then the fourth limb of bhakti, number four out of the 64, is Sarvartmana Vartante. So now that this means that to continue on the bhakti mark, which Gurudev has put you on, you have to associate with sadhus. So Sarvartmana Vartante means you take shelter and you take shiksha from shiksha gurus, and you serve them as you serve and hear from your guru. You serve and hear from proper sajatiya asya snigda sadhus. That's called sadhavartana vartate. So this is bhakti. So taking diksha is part of bhakti. So the characteristics of bhakti are kleshagni. So when you take diksha, because of bhakti, the power of bhakti, which is ladani and samvit, which that bhakti gyan you receive from guru, and that which is the samvit aspect of bhakti, and that bhakti bhav, that bhakti, that feeling, that sentiment, that love, that's in the heart of the guru, that comes inside. So that's bhakti. So bhakti is destroying the sins, which means Krishna, because these are his energies. Ladini Shakti and Samvit Shakti. So this is the how everything becomes benefited. Our minds, are, even if it's raining, we don't care anymore because we're devotees now. So Adi Daivaka, we're not affected by Adi Daivaka mysteries, or Adi Bhotik, or Adi Atmik, because we just cry out, "Oh Gurudev, Oh Gurudev, Oh Krishna, Oh Krishna." And then everything comes out all right. We have Adi Atmika problems, we get healthy. Adi Daivaka, the weather changes. And Adi Bhotika, people improve. Everything improves. Like this. Just like that's said in the Dharmic Shastras, that when a proper religious man, a celibate man, in the Indian culture, original Indian culture, when he accepts a proper celibate kanya, wife, then he's receiving Lakshmi Devi in his life. A wife, a celibate lady who is married in the proper traditional way of Hindu Dharma, then that is the combining of that man with the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, who's embodied. So what does that mean? That means his life improves. He becomes balanced, he becomes happy, he becomes responsible, he grows up, he becomes fortunate, he may increase his wealth, his paisa, his rupees may increase just by the presence of that chaste wife under his wing, so to speak, or serving together with him in the marriage grihastha ashram, the marriage arrangement. And then, of course, the weather will change because he thinks of every day that, the sun's shining. He's singing like a bird, when he first gets married. So all these things happen just with the combination of one material person and another material person of a particular quality. The man has a particular quality, and especially the kanya, they have the qualities of kanya, a virgin, a celibate virgin. So when these qualities combine, just as two people, then so much goodness comes to both. So much improvement in the physical, mental, and emotional level. The woman becomes more physically balanced and happy, and all everything together. Man needs woman, woman needs man. That's why we have this marriage. They complement each other. In the Oriental philosophy of China, or maybe Japan, they have this symbol called yin-yang. Yin-yang. Yin means, I forget, but I think yin means masculine and yang means female. The symbol, you must have seen it. So the yin-yang symbol, it represents, it's a circle with one white S-shaped figure and another black S-shaped figure. And they represent the union of the two, of the male and female principle, and the whole total reality that we live in is full of passive and active, the active and passive principle, the aggressive and the receptive principle. So the active principle or the receptive, the active principle is the man, and the passive principle is the woman. So it's called yin-yang. So there, when they come, so in other words, they come together to make the total. So when lady marries husband, then that becomes total. So that's just material. What to speak of when a soul surrenders at the feet of the Sadguru. A guru represents Sakshat Hari. So now, how much betterment he'll have. If just a kanya or a virgin lady becomes one's wife, he improves the man and the woman. They improve their physical health, they improve their emotional health, and their whole life experience and even nature, everything improves for them. This is told in Shastra. So what to speak of when the conditioned soul meets the guru? His physical being will improve because the wife doesn't take your karma. She actually complicates it. No, ultimately, she does in one sense, because if the grihastha ashram is successful, both people get liberated. The husband and wife, if they're devotees and they do bhakti bhajan, then they both attain prema and get liberated. So in one sense, he's taking her karma and she's taking his karma, but actually bhakti is destroying all the karma for both of them. Bhakti Bhajan. It's a very appropriate verse where Brahmaji is speaking in Brahma Samhita. Karamani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. You ever heard this term? Karamani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. This is verse 54 of Brahma Samhita, and the key phrase, they're all key phrases, everything is important. Every word and every line in the whole phrase, whole shloka. But karmani nirdahati, because we're talking about this now, diksha and bhakti bhajan. So he says, karmani nirdahati, that all the karmas are destroyed by bhakti bhajan. So if the wife does bhakti bhajan, shud bhakti bhajan, ananya bhakti, and the husband does shud bhakti, ananya bhakti, all the karmas are destroyed. And any that means, what does that mean? The guru has already taken the prabdha, so that's 25% are gone. There's still 75% in your bank locker. In your lockers, there's the aprabdha, kutam and bijam, the seed, and then the pile of seeds, and then the tree with the fruit, you know, fruits yet to fall. Fruits are there, but they haven't. That's aprabdha, about to be prabdha. So that all the subtle body and all the karmas that are keeping us in this material body, that are binding us in this this material world, it's called karma bandhana. So this is the idea by karmani nirvahati kintu shabakti bhajam. Many times I quoted this in my taste before. That the karmani nirdahati. Nirdahati even sounds like we say hanyate, hanyate, hanyamane shari, right? The hanyate, hanyamane shari. Second chapter, the soul is never can never be killed by any weapon, all this. It never can be killed. Can't kill or be killed. It's not. So this hanyate, nirdahati, hati, hanyate, means it totally destroys. So bhakti bhajan completely destroys all the karmas. So this is the point that the guru, he gives diksha, and by the bhakti and by his mercy and by the mercy and blessings of Krishna, all your prabdha is destroyed. The guru may suffer or may not. That's up to Krishna. And if he suffers, it doesn't mean, oh, the guru is suffering, he's not advanced. Because sometimes people even preach that way. So, I've heard that before from some sannyasi preachers. Oh, if the guru is suffering, that means that, no, he's not advanced. You can't say that. Prabhupada, because it appears that the guru is suffering, but is he suffering or not? We don't know, because suffering is something, the body appears to be suffering. Anybody else would say, I'm suffering. But the guru's consciousness is with Krishna, maybe he's not suffering at all. But that difficulty is experienced, it's generally, most we can say it's something Krishna wants him to experience. And it's not the karma of his disciples. Although Rupa Goswami does say that, not in this regard so much, but he says that if a shishya takes initiation from a guru that's not very advanced, he will get, that will be a problem if he's only a Kanishta Adhikar or a Madhya Madhikari. It'll be a problem for the new disciple because he will get insufficient guidance on the path of bhakti and he won't be able to get his doubts removed or even his questions answered sufficiently or satisfactorily to his satisfaction. It's not that every Diksha Guru has to have, it's not a know-it-all. He doesn't have to have the answer to every single question. But he should have a good command of the Shastra and the basic tattvas and philosophies. So this is something, some ideas about the Guru taking reactions.